Welcome back to Presales Unleashed, the show where we go deep on the craft of solution engineering, the people who do it best, and the tools that are changing the game. My name is Tim, and today I'm joined by Idir Uhab, a seasoned solution engineer who's seen it all, from early days as a software engineer at tech-driven companies such as Delivery Hero to years spent solving tough problems at New Relic, Splunk, and GitLab. Idir brings a blend of technical depth from actual engineering and real-world pre-sales experience. About a year ago, he joined N8N, an AI automation platform that's riding the wave of one of the biggest shifts happening in tech right now, automation powered by AI. So why did I want Idir on the show? Very simple. When I talk to our community, AI and automation are at the top of everyone's mind. We are looking for ways to get more done with less, to streamline the messy parts of our workflows and to stay ahead of the curve. And Idir is right in the thick of that. In this conversation, we bounce around ideas, talk about how he is automating his own work, how he is helping customers and other SEs at the same time, and what's possible today with a platform such as N8N. Let's get into it. Idir, welcome to the show. Glad to have you.
Thank you very much. The pleasure for the invitation. Very happy to be here.
So in our previous conversation, we talked, and actually, let me start differently. The way I was made aware that you are there is from, I would call him almost a friend, someone who we've been in touch for several years. His name is Elias, and he works for Salesforce. And he said, hey, there's this fantastic event in Berlin that I wanted to go to. Unfortunately, I didn't get the chance to actually come by, but it's about AI automation and workflows specifically for solution engineers. And this is the person who's, by the way, who's holding this meetup. And then he was showing me your LinkedIn profile. And then I said, whoa, this looks like an interesting person to speak to, because obviously AI is something that is on everyone's mind. And there is not a lot of specific and dedicated content for solution engineering yet out there. That's why I was specifically so curious about it. So glad that you're joining us on this conversation. I actually want to start the conversation with a why. Maybe it's obvious for some, but maybe not for everyone. What's your opinion? Why should solution engineers care about automation?
That's a really good question. And to be honest, it's sometimes it's really hard to think about the answer when you don't really have the use case. Isn't that something I've actually, during the workshop, is the first thing I used to say. Because people, you know, SEs, we have a lot of work to do. I mean, we have like POCs, we have also takeable trials. We have to teach actually our customers, do the proper qualification. Usually even we take care of the post-sales side of things, because they have been, basically we have the relationship with the customer, right?
Yes.
And when I worked in my previous companies, one of the biggest problems I had is have way too many things, but way too many things that were exactly the same. And I was doing them over and over. And when you work in a company which is not really like into the automation space, you go with the flow, right? You don't stop, you just do it. What happened when I joined 10@10? It was exactly we are basically automation. The CEO was saying we have to be more efficient. And then we got some time to build our automation. So one day I was just sitting around and I was basically making a list of things that I was doing in my daily job. And what are the things that I can do? Basically do like in a repetitive way, either like every day or every week or every month. And then it's like, damn it, I have like tons of things. Like, for example, like notes is one of the things that I realized that it was consuming a lot of time. First of all, I was losing a lot of focus when I was talking to my customers, because one of the, you know, when I was younger, I was very good at multitasking. Now that I'm aging, I realize that I'm not as good as I used to be. So now I either listen or I write. And then luckily we all got this kind of, recordings. Then interaction with the AEs. I think one of the biggest complaints probably if you have experienced that is not enough notes from the AEs, so you don't get the context. So to me, it was just a way to make my life easier and less stressful. And of course, getting more accurate information to the customer.
Okay.
That's why I think we have to, and that's only one topic. We have plenty of them, but I'm going to talk about, this is the main one, I believe, that to make our life better.
Yeah. So you're basically saying a good indication to consider automation is when you have tasks that repeat over and over again. That's indication number one. But I also, like in the last piece, you also mentioned something that indicated to me that it can even play a role in the quality of work, that it can actually elevate the output, so to say, even though maybe it's even faster because of automating something that is repetitive. But not only is it faster, it can actually also be better, bluntly saying. Was I hearing correctly?
That's correct. I mean, one of the things, and I hate to say that, but it happened already many times that I have to jump in a customer call and I had no context. I didn't know what to say. I didn't even know what the customer wanted. And it happens sometimes because we have to, I believe you have the same, right? Or you had the same in the past.
I can only nod along, of course. I mean, it's one of the major pain points that many SEs will face, that they're given very little context, maybe 2-3 bullet points via email, and then next week Tuesday, please show the custom demo to him. I think every SE can identify with that challenge.
Exactly. Even 5 minutes before, right? Not even like a week before. Probably even 5 minutes before. These are the notes. And that's it. So yeah, when we talk about quality, so imagine you as a customer, imagine as a person who is interested to partner with a vendor, and then you jump in a call and you start asking nonsense questions to that user. You as a customer, of course, there are some people who are really nice. They're really like, they understand that they go into they repeat everything from the scratch and they try to give you all the context that probably your colleague or yourself should have had. But what happens if you can, I can automate already the discussions that either myself or my colleagues had in the past, and I can get right at the beginning of the week or right after the call, like a summary, and not just the summary, but also the bullet points that are important for the customer from the technical perspective. Then I can jump, and this half an hour, first of all, I can reduce the length of the meeting. I don't need any more an hour because most of the questions that I was supposed to ask I already asked previously. So I can shorten that meeting by 15 minutes, even sometimes half an hour. And then that half an hour, I'm going to ask him questions that he, she, or they didn't responded yet, which means that the quality of this discussion would be very good. And I'm talking about just the qualification. I'm not talking about the rest ones, but just imagine how much time are you saving and the quality that you're delivering by only automating the first interaction with your customers.
Right. And you know what? That example that you're providing, it resonates deeply with me because I specifically remember at multiple companies that I used to work for, I would go through the extra mile of actually listening to the recording between the AE and the customer. If there was a recording, I mean, in some cases there wasn't one, but if there was one, I would always take the time and listen to the recording, maybe on 2x, right? So 60 minutes becomes 30, but still it's like 30 minutes invested to just extract the information that I felt I could really use to make the next meeting with the customer more impactful. So having that automated, I would say it resonates deeply, yeah, for sure. So thanks for sharing that example. And I think when you and I spoke first, you also shared like a couple of examples with me. And maybe this is also, I guess, the main talking point for this conversation, that we go through a couple of examples and maybe one or two listeners are inspired by those examples and then feel, hey, there's maybe really something in it for us. So let's go through them step by step. What other examples can you maybe share?
Sure.
Where you believe in solution engineering space and a workflow, by the way, made by NetN could, for example, provide some leverage to be faster.
That's a really good one. Repetition. Yeah. I'm gonna first of all explain the context so people understand, but I'm gonna explain a concept which is called RAG. And it's a way where basically RAG is I think it's called retrieval augmented generation. And it's an AI technique that improves the LLMs by retrieving relevant information that has already stored beforehand, right? It can be, for example, past conversations. Most of us are using Slack and things like that. So what we're doing is we are provided with this data source to the LLMs to tell him, hey, whenever I'm asking you a question, use this kind of data, which is historical data from my organization, my team, whatever, to provide better answers. Okay, so now I explain that. I'm going to explain you the solution. Why? Because I don't know if everybody is familiar with this kind of concept.
Makes sense. Something. Yeah, makes sense.
So the team member, he just joined. And usually when we join, we ask all the new team members to build an automation. It has to be either helping the SE team, helping the AE team, or helping the company, right? But they have to get familiar with the tool and making our lives better. So the first one joined like, hey, dear, what can I do? And I told him, you know what you can do? I mean, it's going to help us a lot. Having a bot that's going to answer questions from our AEs that are coming ad hoc. Mitch Mizo, we have already as SEO, right? We jump in a call once per week and they ask you questions. But what if they have the question on Mondays at 6 p.m.? Or what if they have the question because you have a team in the US? If they ask the question at 2 a.m. because it's the time zone. And do I have to answer every single question? Because one of the biggest issues also the SEs have is the lot that we lose focus really quickly because we got messaged by, usually you don't have one AESE, right? You have one SE, multiple A's.
100%, yes.
So we said, let's tackle that. We have Slack, we have Notion, we have Salesforce. We have tons of tools with a lot of questions and answers already made. Why don't we just plug our Slack to, we make a rack. It's basically we use historical data. We plug our LLM. And every single A that has a question has to use at Einstein. And by the way, it's not Einstein, the Salesforce product. It's, we call it Einstein because it's a German company.
Yeah, I was getting confused. Yeah.
No, okay. It's called Einstein because the company is German. Who is one of the smartest German persons in the world? Einstein is very smart. So we decided to call him Einstein because he has all the answers.
Over 1,000 sales and pre-sales professionals at companies like SAP, Salesforce, and LeanIX are already benefiting from the Disco Deck. With the 60 most important questions covering decision-making, economic factors, technology, and 5 other categories, it takes your discovery to the next level. The Disco Deck is available in both German and English. Head over to discodeck.shop now to grab your copy. You'll find the direct link in the show notes, of course. Thanks for your support, and now back to the episode.
I mean, at least it has a good explanation. So right now, A's, rather than just saying add solutions and then we get all pinged, and we have to answer. Now it's at Einstein, whatever question, ask a question. And then Einstein gives you an answer. And also have a score, like a confidence answer rate, which is from 0 to 100%.
Okay.
Also, you can ask an SE to validate that question, to reject it or to edit. So to be fair with you, it has been a month and a half that I'm not checking and I'm not answering any single question from the A's since then.
Crazy. So let me understand this just a little bit better. When an AE asks a question, do you still, is it like a common Slack channel that is exposed to
yes,
everyone?
Have a group.
And then there's a Einstein bot and the bot is basically providing the response, but there's
exactly.
Still visibility for the rest of the team as well.
Exactly. It's a group Slack channel. It's a public. Everybody in the company can join it. And usually have people from marketing who joins because when they learned there was Einstein responding to ad hoc questions with like a 30 seconds delay, everybody was jumping in because now they ask everything. Like it doesn't matter if it's technical or not. So yeah, it's a shared Slack channel. It's a group, sorry.
Yeah,
it's a channel, sorry. And it's public.
Okay, got it. And am I standing correctly? So let's say the confidence score is, I don't know, below 50%. What do you do with that?
Usually what we still get the answer, but then you have an SE who got pinged. Say, hey, we got an answer, which is below, then I think the threshold is 85%. If it's below 85%, an SE gets a warning, say, hey, we've got a response that is not really accurate. Then an SE can, with reactions on the message, like with a check mark, cross, or edit, we can say, it's not validated by NSE, and then SE gives an answer.
Okay.
So it's basically we introduce this concept of human in the loop, right?
Yes.
To make sure that NSE can say, yeah, I approve that answer.
Okay. And does that feed back into the RAG or the LLM to learn over time?
Yeah.
Is that also
exactly.
How it goes?
Okay, exactly. Yeah. That it feeds back. That's why the confidence can change, because if a question has a low confidence, what we do is we're gonna take the new answer, we're gonna feed it back into the rack. So now we got more information, we have better accuracy, because now if an SE has responded, it goes, the answer is considered as 100% accuracy.
Yeah. I have recently had a conversation with an SE leader in a company that has been around for much longer than N8N. And they also tried to build something what you're describing, right? I think they have been around for like 10, 15 years and they have a lot of history on product development and versioning history and so on. And the challenge that they were explaining to me that they tried to implement what you are describing, but they really struggled because over the course of time and with all the material that is in the back end, so to say, sometimes to our one question, there's not one answer, but maybe 5 years ago, the answer was yes. And then 2 years ago, the answer was no. And today the answer is yes, but it depends. And over time, there's sort of due to the evolution of the product portfolio, it's not actually as clear cut. How do you handle that? Like if you have such a long history of data that is not perfectly aligned?
I would say timestamp is your friend. So at the end, you have to, in our case, we don't consider like, for example, the day that an answer was made as part of the confidence, because we are like, basically we have been here around for only 5-6 years now.
Yes.
So it's not that long.
Yes.
So we don't have, our product didn't change as much to say, okay, the confidence will drop. I worked in a company, like I worked previously in New Relic, and New Relic in 2016 didn't have any log solution. And our answer to the reason why is because we thought we didn't need log solution. 2 years later, we released a log solution. So to your question, like, what happened if I ask a question like, hey, do we have something about logs? If we rely only on the answers from RAC, most likely going to say no, because that was the answer to 2016. But in RAC, you can also take in consideration the timestamp and the day that was a question added. So what happened right now? Our confidence is based on how many times the answer was approved by NSC, how many documentations we have, and also the source of information. For example, if it's coming from docs, it is higher. What happened if we add another component, which is time? If it's longer than X amount, then we drop the confidence by, I don't know, that depends within the organization, or we don't really take care of if it's 10 years ago, we don't even answer that question. We say there is no answer.
Yeah.
Which can happen, good. Right? But yeah. We have to start thinking about different components that will give us more, I wouldn't say refuse completely the answer, but giving us the actual view based on the different component. If you have been 20 years, again, the most recent things has to score higher than the one that are older.
Yeah, makes sense. So you're basically associating like almost like a weighting depending on the source and the age of the information, and that influences the confidence score is basically what I'm hearing.
Exactly. Documentation is 100%. You can rely on it. If you go to Reddit, I'm not sure if I would rely 100% on that.
I mean, Reddit is a good example. I mean, this is a bit off topic now, but I know that, for example, LLMs like OpenAI and so on, they actually have a relatively high weighting associated to Reddit and Wikipedia, because it's one of the most credible sources out there, because it's like actual experience and user-based as opposed to like random stuff that a marketer has maybe produced.
You know, funny thing I've learned, because when I saw Reddit going to the stock market, like IPO, I didn't understand how a blog post will go IPO. But then after a few years, I learned that is the biggest source of information from the LLMs. Yeah. And that's how they make in business, actually, from the data they have. And it's like, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yes.
And interesting, because it's not always what you see the surface is the actual what it is.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Okay, cool. So a very tangible use case, I think. I mean, if I look back at all the companies that I've used to work in, we always had like an AESE big channel where AEs could ask type of questions. And then there was always a question who is like responsible for it, who has to answer it. So I think a very practical example. Thanks for sharing that one. I know you have one or two more up your sleeve. So what is another one that you would see really useful?
So here is about follow-ups. One of the things that we were missing a lot, and again, I would like to ask you if you feel related, is I got in a customer call. I have in the same day, I have six, one after the other one. So First call, I jump in, I talk to the customer. I have 2 minutes, I mean, like a space between the another one. I jump into the next one. And then it's 6 o'clock, your brain is completely drained. And it's like, I'm going to do all the follow-ups tomorrow.
Yes.
What happened? Tomorrow you have the similar day. Then the day after, it's weekend, you want to relax. And then, oh, it's Monday. I didn't do any of my follow-ups. I have my follow-up call with the POC trial. I don't know. I don't remember exactly what they were telling me. I'm going to sound as a fool, because they're going to tell me that if I haven't blocked something. And I said, that has to be stopped. I don't want that anymore to happen. I don't want to feel embarrassed or ashamed to be jumping a call without remembering what the customer telling me. So one of the things we did is a system that is taking the recording and is breaking down all the asks, follow-ups, and any kind of the information that I need to know for either future calls or at least to follow up, for example, Salesforce or whatever CRM system you're using. Because in our case, we're required to have certain data on each call. So say, I don't know, this call was, we did this, and the customer raised these concerns. But to me, it was really hard to memorize and to write them down. I was forgetting. So we did a process, which is taking the transcript, takes the issues, blockers from the or product gaps, that will push that information into the product system that our product managers has, attaches already the customer with the value of that customer. And then in the next follow-up meeting we have with the product team, we can already discuss about those topics without me having to do anything. So for one single call, I managed to tackle two things. updating my product team about the gaps. And second thing is, I know in Salesforce, it's already updated in Salesforce, all the conversation, all the main topics that we have to have recorded.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, I know there are software solutions out there who just solve the problem of documenting product gaps and associating which open opportunities would more likely close when these product gaps would be eliminated. And you basically, what I'm hearing is you basically automated that piece. And I don't know, maybe you have to confirm at some stage in the process. I don't know where. So you have like sort of human intervention in the loop at some point.
Exactly.
You're nodding. That would be interesting to understand. But you basically, you automated that using an workflow.
Yeah, exactly. We use, for example, Gong as a tool for recording, but it can be Gong, it can be Google Transcript. It doesn't matter. I mean, at the end, the transcript solution is just an input that we are getting.
Right.
And you're right. We do have a human in the loop component here, which is Slack. I mean, for us, because we use a lot of, I mean, Slack is one of the biggest tools we use. I think most of the companies out there, they use Slack. So every time that something happens, of course, there is a delay, right? Because you get a call, you have to let Gong or any tool to process the transcript.
Sure.
And then when it's done, it has to send the data. Usually it's 20 minutes, half an hour. Well, with the outage we had last week on AWS, I think it was a bit longer.
Yeah, that was a big one, yeah.
We got called back 24 hours delayed. But yeah, I think it wasn't that critical. The good thing is it's not as critical, so it doesn't stop the business, right?
Yeah.
And then we have to agree. We have basically in Slack, we have created this form, which with pre-filled pieces of information. And then the SE can just update the data, delete the data, and then accept. And that will be pushed into. We can even decline, say, I don't agree, I don't like it, decline, and nothing is going to happen.
Yes.
Or say, I accept, and then you can push the data in Salesforce and in this tool that we have for feature gaps.
You know, I mean, thanks for sharing this use case. I would once again, I mean, you asked in the beginning, is it something that most people are challenged with? I can only speak from my own experience. I remember, for example, at Miro, we kept such a list of opportunities that would benefit. In this case, we were talking about GDPR compliance and certain certifications, which the product at this time didn't have. And there were some deals in the pipeline that were blocked because we didn't have that. And what we did is we put up an Excel sheet and we just asked around in the entire account executive team and said, okay, which deals are being blocked? And then we sort of tried to keep it up to date. But what you are describing is, I mean, I did this sort of investigation with the account management team in Germany. But of course, there were sales teams across the entire globe. And I'm sure, I mean, GDPR compliance, yes, maybe a European thing, but there was a France team, there was a Spain team, there was an Italian team. I didn't ask them. Maybe they had deal blockers for that as well. So I think a solution like the one you're describing would have been able to investigate that automatically on a much bigger scale and then be more accurate and more complete and have, I mean, in this case, in the conversation with product management, have a very clear list of priorities, which type of features are associated to what type of revenue, which is obviously the end goal to have. So I think a very tangible use case.
And you know, the good thing is you can also, we can also share the link of the call. So even if PM wants to go and understand the details, because it happens often that they want to hear more, to understand more, not just the title and description. They want to understand the context and how did we get to that ask or that question.
Yeah.
So they get also link of the Gong call so they can go and listen to the call.
Yes. Yeah. Makes sense. And you know, I mean, this is why I was saying it earlier. There are software solutions out there that do this right now, and you have to buy these software solutions to do this type of feature gap tracking and so on. What you're basically saying is you build a workflow in N8N and you don't have to buy any software for it. Well, you have
exactly.
to obviously set it up and configure it. But I'm sure that is probably a lot cheaper than buying additional licenses from a third-party software vendor, yeah?
Yeah, I think it depends on how fast do you want to go. In our case, it's because we have so many custom things. You know what happens when you buy already a built-in solution? Because we had that in GitLab. We had already a solution which was built. But then there are a few things that like doesn't really work for us, but there is nothing we can do. Here, if I want, because the workflow started just as a simple way to remind me that it was a call. From there, then another colleague told me, oh, would be great if we can do this. And then he just added this new thing without breaking my stuff. And then somebody else knew like, oh, we bought a new solution for product tracking. Why don't we plug it? Like, oh, let's plug it in. So for us, it was a way to let us extend our use case. And it's going to be growing because the more people are joining, more customers you get, the more pains you have. So for all the solutions, you either have to ask or wait until it's developed, or you have to buy another one. which is have to go through procurement, you have to go through evaluation. In my case, was just you're German, I don't know how to say that word, but Hundefutterzeit.
I think the Hundefutterzeit.
Hundefutterzeit, yeah, good. Hundefutterzeit, yeah, correct.
That doesn't ring a bell to me. I thought you were going to say like eat your own dog food, because that's like you're living your own like value proposition, obviously internally. That's what I'm hearing, but that's not what you mean, I guess.
Yeah, that's exactly the one. But probably I'm wrong. But that's the word. Like, we have basically once per month where we have like a block where we have to create things for our own benefit.
Yes,
and we use N10. And actually, it's the best way to try your own software
100%.
By using. And then we use for that one. And that's why this, like say, a few hours per month, it's helping us to extend whenever it's needed.
Yeah.
And again, it doesn't really work for, probably doesn't really work for everyone, but it can cover most of the cases. It's not about doing what I'm saying. It's just find the process that it feels critical for you. Because probably this is not probably, I don't know, for you probably it was in that case. For me it is, but can be other teams that they are saying, no, that doesn't really sound familiar. I don't need it because we have something else. Think about other things.
Yeah. Yeah, and you said that in the beginning, right? I mean, why even care about automation? In the end, it comes down to your way of working. It comes down to the typical customer work that you do and so on. And I mean, the other example that you, I mean, you shared it like two and one. You talked about the product gaps and the documentation of that and for product to prioritize the right gaps at the right time and so on, which is, I think, a use case that is very tangible and useful. And then you also talked about, you didn't say it in those words. That's why I want to clarify. You also said, hey, I have these back-to-back meetings all day, right? 6-7 meetings a day. And I know exactly what you're talking about. I had it. I mean, I think pretty much every software company out there after COVID had that situation, right? We were not traveling anymore so much. Everything was virtual. So back-to-back meetings is definitely something that I think many of also our listeners here will probably face on a regular basis. Now, and what you described is, after every meeting, it not only triggers the product gap conversation in the end, but it also triggers, for example, updates to your CRM and the entry to the opportunity. Correct. Is what you were saying, right?
That's correct. That's
which is
correct,
like a major pain point for, I would say, if I look back at my 5 employers in SaaS and IT, every one of those companies had that issue. To have properly updated, documented CRM fields with what is the pain point, what is the cost of inaction, or for example, if we used something like Medic, like a sales methodology, populate those fields correctly. So, I mean, you're nodding along. Are you saying that this is something that you're also automating based on customer conversations, take this transcript and then update CRM?
To be honest, it's the first thing I did. Because usually my biggest problem are the A's. Not biggest problem as a person, but biggest problem in terms of process. Because they tend to have a lot of... Let's say it's mainly about the ratio, right? It's usually not one-to-one. So they have... I work in the enterprise space. So my enterprise rep can have 10, 50, 20 accounts.
Yes.
And I have 3 reps or 4 reps, which means I have 60 accounts to manage, not 20 anymore. So I usually don't want to have this kind of messages on Slack. Hey, can you please update me that call? Can you please tell me what's happening? And I'm pretty sure for their forecast calls, they have exactly the same problem. Their manager is going to ask them, can you please update me? Or what was the word? Salesforce hygiene. That's the word mostly used
CRM
for
hygiene.
By the
100%,
yes. CRM hygiene. Yeah, exactly. By the managers. And they were struggling. It's like, if I can help the AE to be on top of these things and spend less time on boring bureaucracy, to spend it more time doing the things that can help me, for example, to whenever there is an RFI or something like that, to try to do his piece rather than just drop everything on me. And return what I'm going to do, I'm going to give him a tool that is going to help him to have the CRM hygiene done without them having to do anything like in the foreground, right? Everything is in the background. So the same call I use, for example, to update my Salesforce or my CRM and feature gap, it's used also for them. And we have this metric, as you mentioned, we have this the different fields, and they can also edit it. And I can tell you, that's one of the most used automations we have at the company.
Right.
And it went that far that one day, it stopped for one single day. Like, I'm not talking about a week, one single day. And everybody was complaining that they didn't receive an update. And then we realized how useful was the automation.
How valuable it is.
And how much they use it. Because usually AEs, when they give them new processes, they're not into processes because they are too busy, right? The first time in my life that AEs complained because something that would be for them was missing.
Hmm.
So these kind of things that help makes you think that is really important to do it.
Yes. I mean, it makes me wonder now. I mean, obviously, these are use cases that you've implemented in your own organization at NNN. And I guess these are the type of topics you speak about when you do these type of meetups in Berlin and stuff like that. But I mean, I mean, just me listening to what you're describing here right now, I'm thinking every software company out there can probably highly benefit from it. You mentioned you work in the enterprise space. I'm guessing your target company that you work with in your normal SE life is not necessarily software and IT companies, but many other things. And they maybe have completely different use cases than the ones you're describing. But I'm thinking what you're describing, I mean, I cannot imagine anyone listening to this and saying, no, I don't want that.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, actually, you're right. I mean, it's not everybody. Because again, the good thing is I'm using it for myself to say I want my life easier. But you're right. We have marketers, people who are marketing space. We'll talk about that if you want later. But yeah, people from marketing do want to automate. It's all about automation. Be careful. Doesn't have to be AI. Because that's something I want to really highlight a lot. People here think that AI, I'm doing that because of AI. Some processes don't have AI involved at all because I don't need them. It's very deterministic, right? There is an input A, and based on certain criteria which are fixed, I have output A or B. That's it. I don't have to use OpenAI. I don't have to use something. I don't need it.
Yeah, it's an important distinction and actually a lesson learned also from us here. I mean, me and my co-founder Jan, we're building our own company right now. And we are also considering how automation platforms can help make our lives easier. To give you one specific example, we have when we have new customers, there is an onboarding and assessment process happening. And we built this onboarding assessment completely using an AI prompt. And the output is in many cases very deterministic. And I had a discussion with my co-founder and said, hey, you're actually using AI for something that should more be programmed. It programmed in the sense of like with, I don't know, Python or whatever, because it's a deterministic output. You're calculating something here. So you're basically using an LLM to a mathematical calculation in this particular instance, which doesn't really make sense because that is, as you say, a deterministic problem to be solved. And a programming language can tackle that much more consistently and systematically than an LLM or Gen AI would ever do. So I fully hear what you're saying. Yeah?
I have an example which doesn't use AI. I call it the annoying bot. It's a system that finds out every time that one of SEs finishes a call with a customer. We send a Slack message saying, hey, you've just finished a call. Then shows you a drop down with the CRM accounts, like the opportunity that you are supposed to be. I mean, that this call is attached to. For example, I'm talking to you. Then I don't know. It says here you are attached to this account. Choose it. Then it chooses the account in the CRM system. I put my notes. I click accept, and thus this is pushing already my notes into log my call into my CRM.
Yes,
doesn't involve AI. It's a straightforward. Like just telling you had the calendar call. Please add your information to it. Accept. Done. Easy, simple, and very cheap.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I know you had one last use case you can share maybe with the audience. Let's go to this one. What is this one about?
Okay. This one is actually built by another colleague from the team, which one day he was telling me, yeah, I'm building something for a demo. And the funny thing is everything started as a demo. Didn't really start as a process for our internally. He called it Org Lens, like a way that you can see inside the company. And the reason why it's because he managed to create a workflow that, given a name, it's called, in your case, it's called, for example, Teams Company, Teams GmbH or SLA or something like that.
Yeah.
And then I want to know everything that you are trying to do within the company, which is posted exposed in internet. Like, he started with a process where he gets like a system which goes to the internet, finds, first of all, if you have any jobs posted, looking for somebody to hire, what is your industry, what are the last, for example, financial rounds you had, how strong economically you are. Yeah. And then another level is once I got all the structure of the company, I'm going to go and loop through every single team and then find who is actually reporting, who these teams belong to, which the C-level. And then towards the end, it gives you a PDF with an executive summary. The company does this, and that. They are in this industry. They had this financial, this is their financial status. These are the teams. And these are the job posts that they have on LinkedIn and Google, whatever. And then you're ready to discuss with them to know whether it makes sense for you to talk to them. whether they are qualified or not. And you know, you don't know how much time it's saving us, because sometimes we have people who are not intended to go, let's say, for automation, but they have something else as a focus. So it helps us a lot to craft a better discovery call based on the information we have.
Really powerful. You're completely automating, I think it used to be called like desk research. Like take 20 minutes, go on the Wikipedia page of the company, check them out on LinkedIn, check the open positions, go on the website, check the news. I used to do that a couple of times. Actually listen to like their earnings calls, for example, like last earnings call. I mean, if it's a public company, then they make those earnings calls public, check the financial statements and stuff like that. So you're basically saying you are using internally a workflow that is doing all of that automatically, and then
exactly
surfacing the most critical information to you before you enter the call. Or how does it?
Yeah.
How does the flow end? Like, you get like an email?
It's
or
a PDF. It's a PDF that you can download. And to be honest, sometimes we can even share that with a customer, like, because there is nothing hidden. It's everything public, right? We are not. I mean, everything we do is to make sure that we are validating the data we have with the initiative. So sometimes we either share like in the screen or even sending them to the email, like, that's the report we've got from you. Tell us if it's accurate. And some customers were impressed at the stage where they were asking us to share with them the workflow.
I can imagine that. I mean, it's super powerful, right?
So yeah, at the end, it's a PDF. Right now, it's just a PDF that you download. I mean, the plan is to extend it to, as I said, good thing about extension. Right now, we don't need anything else. But if we need to start like sending that out into Google Drive to have like a library of, reports, you can do it, or you can send it to your customer, you can send it to the operations team. You just name it. Right now, we don't need it. But who knows? We still have a few years ahead of processes, right?
Yeah, I'm immediately thinking about it. I mean, I don't know if you do this today, but you can obviously do the desk research automatically, then you get the PDF. But maybe even one step further, the automation could suggest, for example, the top 5 discovery questions phrased in a way that it's specific to this company and their initiatives, at least as far as we are aware of, and map it already against our ideal customer profile. And maybe even do a rating, like, how is it ideal customer profile fit 100%? Is it maybe only 80% or is it 20%? You can even enrich it with more information that is unique to, well, whatever we are selling.
You just gave me a good idea, to be honest. I didn't think about that. That's a really, really good input, to be honest.
Nice one.
Really. See, that's the point. The good thing is, that's why when we went to this workshop in Berlin, something similar happened. We live in our, they call it the echo chamber. I work a lot in automation. I do my processes, but I haven't thought about something as simple as what you mentioned. And I think it brings way more value than just the PDF. Because having 5 questions which are can be related to the customer are better than just sharing a PDF.
Yeah.
Nice. So yeah, thank you.
Cool. Yeah, you're welcome. I mean, it's a fantastic use case. I mean, also right now, many companies are just doing this manually, right? And I mean, I know many of our customers that we are working with, which is typically solution engineering teams. I mean, having great desk research obviously enables you to have a much more meaningful conversation in a discovery call or whatever. And therefore, we typically advise that this is time well spent. But of course, if you can automate that, that's like 30 minutes won. Well, I mean, you still have to read it, of course, to make an impact to you. But
that's a good point. That's a really good point, Tim, you mentioned about reading it. Because I just want to highlight the fact that AI doesn't mean it's... just think about engineering. When we built engineering, I got one... Our internal teams members told us, you're not scared that Einstein is going to be better than you. Like, to be fair, I'm not really scared at all. It's instead, I'm happy that it exists because it saved my time. Reason why, it's because AI is really good, but still needs certain human supervision, right? Needs our input, needs our validation. And that's what we have to think. I wouldn't try to automate processes and detach yourself completely from it. Because we're still working with customers. We're still with humans. The reason why I'm an SE is because I like to talk to my customers. Otherwise, I would work in something in the backend. I really want to understand also what they are doing. I'm interested to get this creativity part of the SEs that we have, where suddenly, I don't know, you wake up that day and you're really creative and suddenly you come up with a really good idea that probably AI won't. So you have to use automation as a way to help you and to be more efficient, but not as a replacement of your job. That definitely, I wouldn't think about it.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, as long as humans are buying from other humans, everything else just supports us in that fact. I mean, I could envision that maybe this is not starting an enterprise, but maybe an SMB or something where there's maybe a procurement AI and then a sales AI. They talk to each other and negotiate with each other, and then it's a done deal and humans are not needed. But as long as that is not the case, it's an amplifier and not replacing myself. Yeah. And yeah, that being said, I think we also need to be realistic. I mean, I had a conversation with an SE leader a couple of months back, and he was in his team implementing also more automations and things like demo automation, for example, and other things, right? And he also said, hey, our sales team has doubled and I was able to keep my team the same size because we just starting to work more efficiently now than we used to, for example, 4 or 5 years ago. So I think that's also a reality of it, that many SE leaders today I speak to, they try to achieve more with the same FTEs, with the same capacity, so to say. So, and I think this is what you're sharing here are very tangible examples of what is technically already possible. And actually, that brings me to a question, because when, I mean, in the past couple of weeks and months, we had multiple on-site solution engineering leadership community events. And AI is coming up in all of these, you can imagine. AI and automation and being more efficient and stuff like that. And then I'm also asking, hey, have you played around with N8N? Have you played around with Mac.com or Zapier to actually automate parts of what you're doing today as a solution engineering team? And most of the leaders say they would love to, but they are totally blocked by compliance and IT to actually utilize these type of solutions. So I don't know what, I mean, obviously N8N is on the forefront. You won't have anyone in your company telling you don't use N8N. That would be ridiculous. But in many other companies, that's the reality, that IT and compliance teams are right now still blocking these type of solutions because of concerns.
Yeah, to be fair, one of the, that used to be a problem when we were, when customers are going for the cloud version, because the cloud version at the end is the SaaS. Although we are based in Germany, we are under all the German regulation or European Union regulations. It's true that it helped us a lot, the fact that you can use, first of all, the community version and the self-hosted version. So you can basically shield it. That's why we didn't get so many. The first complaint usually is like, no, we can't do that because you're going to connect to our CRM. It's like, it's not cloud, it's self-hosted. The next question is, what kind of data do you send to your system? Like, none. I mean, you don't really have to send anything, especially if a community, you don't have to send anything. Then it's more about an internal fight rather than the solution is not right. It's about, why can we connect to this tool? And then it can be because the company has a strict policy that doesn't allow you. Then unfortunately, it's not the right time to use automation and we can help that much. But I can tell you, so far I got zero blocker from, you get it at the beginning, but then when you explain it that they have control of the data, usually there are no problems.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not an expert on these automation platforms, but one thing that stood out for me when I looked at N8N is also, as you say, you can deploy it in your own environment, right? You are not dependent to run it as a SaaS. You can actually deploy it wherever you like, and then it's still functional. And obviously, you can cut it off from the external. The one piece that probably does not work very well if you're trying to utilize, for example, like OpenAI APIs or stuff like that, then of course you have the connection again to somewhere else.
Exactly.
Unless you host your own open source LLM or something, then I guess it would work again, which some companies are doing, right? I mean,
also we have to think that if I challenge you to think about, I mean, not now because it's hard to answer questions like on the spot. But if I let you a week to think about processes that you can automate, I'm pretty sure that you will have hundreds of them. Probably some of them are connected to this kind of CRMs, which have a really strict policy, but you might have other processes that are not, you don't really require to have IT. So it's not like all or nothing. You have to fight your own battles and understand which ones are you going to win. And usually what we do is we start with something that has zero dependency and it can help you only to your individual person. And then you can think about increasing it. I mean, that was the first thing I did. I did something to help me. And then when I saw that was easy, I was comfortable, I start building things for the team.
Yeah. And this is exactly how I would like to conclude also this conversation now. I mean, when there's now someone listening to this conversation and they feel inspired by the examples that you've provided, and right now they don't do any of this, which I think is probably the case for the majority of companies, even in SaaS and IT. That's, I think, the case that most of them are not leveraging technologies such as this. What would you suggest are the practical first steps an SE or maybe an SE organization can take to approach it step by step?
To me, the first thing is do it in a personal automation. I'm talking about, don't think about your work. Think about yourself.
Right.
Because I'm pretty sure we have, I'm coaching in Berlin, like a group called the, it's Berlin Irish rugby team. Okay. Kids, and we have a club, but I'm training kids.
Yes.
And before even joining an attend, it's like, I get parents asking me, when is the training happening? My kid has, 8 years old. What is the time? What is the place? Like, I like them, but I don't want to be replying every single email, right?
Yeah.
So I created an automation, which was, I put like all the schedules, the group age, and then every time I connected to my Gmail, every single message was responded automatically by AI. And there is no human in the loop here. It's actually automatic. So sometimes I see parents just popping up to the training and I have never spoken. They thought, yeah, you were 80. I spoke to you. It's like, I don't remember. Yeah, of course, because it was AI. So that's how I start. It wasn't me, but now I'm fine telling them, yeah, it was AI, not me. But at the beginning, 2 years ago, I didn't want to tell them.
Yes.
So if somebody's listening, then there's apologies for that. But that's how we started. Like, I started like doing things with my personal stuff. And they're like, oh, if I can do replying emails for my personal things in my personal life. And I was really comfortable at some point, like, I'm going to try something little on my job. And in the end, anything can be deployed in a single container. You don't really need to have a big infrastructure, like one container to do little things. And then you step by step, like, oh, this little thing about transcribing thing. I have access to the transcription because it's my call. Let's connect and see what I can get. And then you start partnering with other team members and you start brainstorming like, guys, as a group, what is our biggest problem? And then you find out that, for example, feature gaps is a big problem. Then let's automate that. So that's my advice as a beginner, I would call it, on the automation space. Try to do something simple and help you and impact yourself first before going into the wider group.
Yeah, I think that makes lots of sense. Thank you for sharing those examples. Love the story with the rugby email and stuff like that. Yeah, it's a good one. Very, very tangible. Idia, a very insightful conversation. Thank you so much for sharing all of these examples. Is there anything burning that is on your mind that you want to share with the rest of the audience?
There is one thing I'm going to publicly say. We have at NATEN something called templates. And we have a colleague, Angel, is one of our RevOps team members who joined, I think, a bit earlier than me. And one of the things he thought, because we have a lot of data, but I think we use only, I'm going to pretend I know the stats, but I'm going to just say a random number. 70% of the data, we don't use it. Again, it's not accurate. I'm just saying a number. But what I mean is like, we have a lot of data, recordings, notes, things like that. And he was thinking, I have this information and can be helpful for marketing, can be good for product, and can be good for sales. So why, instead of using CRM, take every single transcript, have three different agents or three different workflows that are extracting data relevant only for those departments. For example, one agent extracts only sales, this one only product, and the other one only marketing. And then provide that information to like any tool they use. And that's actually publicly available on the templates website, which is called CallForge. It's a quite big workflow, but it does that. It splits the data into the relevant department. So if you have even on legal, you can also plug legal if you want in there. And it's something that you can already test and play around with it.
It's an insane use case. I mean, if you look at any organization, I mean, even like medium-sized organizations, they probably have hundreds of sales calls every single week. That is so much knowledge and information that is potentially useful, which we obviously would never be able to be analyzed by human hand because it's way too much data. But yeah. Thanks for sharing.
Can I ask a question? Just, I don't know if you are consume a lot of YouTube. Do you watch YouTube videos?
Sometimes, yes. Yeah, sure.
Can I ask you, are you the kind of person who usually saves videos on YouTube? Like say, oh, I'm going to watch that later. And then you save it in a playlist or something like that?
Sometimes I do, yes.
Okay. Can I ask you, do you ever go back again to those videos after a year or something like that?
It depends. I will not say no, because sometimes I do, but I would say it's more the exception than the rule, I will say.
Exactly. So I'm asking you that if something happens with calls. I have a call right now with you. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to, for example, watch it today because that's my call. But in a week time, 2 weeks time, I'm not going to go back to it because I have too many of them that to me is really hard. So that's what we try to extract the data, put in a way that can help us to board. Like, for example, I think you worked in Miro, right?
Yes, I did, yeah.
You have all the canvas, you have the task, you can drop it. You basically can make actions. In a call, you can't make any action. It's just something you can listen. So we try to transform the call that you will never, ever hear before into something that can be used and tracked. Mm-hmm. That's the whole idea.
Powerful. Idir, once again, very inspiring conversation for me. I hope also for some of our listeners. So once again, thank you so much for joining us on the show and sharing your knowledge with us.
Thank you very much for your invitation and glad to be here and hope you enjoyed it.
Cheers. That was Presales Unleashed, your podcast for sales engineering in B2B software sales. And if you enjoyed this episode and found it useful, please subscribe to the show. If you have any questions, comments, or topic requests, please write us. We appreciate every message on LinkedIn and we'll respond typically to everything. So you can find links to our profiles in the show notes. Thanks for joining us and see you next time.